Chères auditrices, chers auditeurs, bonsoir depuis le festival Jazz 11 Plus de Lausanne. La 36e édition a débuté le 31 octobre et ce soir, le 1er novembre, la tête d'affiche est le duo Joe Lovano au saxophone et Jacobro à la guitare, réunissant quelques-uns des meilleurs instrumentistes de la planète, les trois bassistes Larry Grenadier, Thomas Morgan, Anders Christensen et les deux batteurs Joey Baron, Jorge Rossi. Ce projet multigénérationnel est un hommage au batteur Paul Motion, décédé en 2011, collaborateur de longue date de Lovano et de Bro. On est allé rencontrer Joe Lovano avant son concert. Ce qui suit est l'interview en anglais avec ce légendaire musicien qui côtoie le micro de la fabrique une deuxième fois depuis 2016. Hi Joe, how are you?
Hello, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again and thank you again for talking to us on the radio La Fabrique. We are really, really happy about it. Tonight you're in Lausanne again. You come to Switzerland quite often, which we are really, really thankful for. This time you're together with Jacobro and the five outstanding musicians that I mentioned earlier. You're all here to pay a tribute to your late friend and long-standing collaborator Paul Motion, with whom you played extensively in a trio including the guitarist Bill Frisell. Paul left us in November 2011, 12 years ago, so why now this tribute project?
Well, you know, it's not as much a tribute as it is an inspired collaboration from Paul's beautiful legacy. I played with Paul, with Bill Frisell, from 1981 till he passed 2011. So for 30 years, doing so many countless tours in Europe and in the States and recordings, you know. And Jacob Bro started to play with Paul, I don't know, 2004 maybe?
The electric
bebop band. And Larry Grenadier, Thomas Morgan, and Anders also, during that period, played with Paul. So everyone has a relationship with Paul. Now, Joey Baron and Jorge Rossi are disciples of Paul and knew him and were inspired by Paul's lifetime in this creative music, you know. And so there's something there that brought us together, Jacob and I, to form this group and to record for ECM, Once Around the Room is the title of the recording. And it's in reference to Paul, his tune, Once Around the Park, which is a beautiful tune of his that I recorded. And so we've been playing over the last few years. And just played a week at the Village Vanguard recently, earlier this year. And this is the first full tour where we're playing like a 10-concert tour throughout Europe right now.
And one of the questions that I exactly had was, Paul, you know, it was explosive, it was full of ideas. It was amazing how he managed to break some of the barriers, I would say, in the jazz academic world. What fascinated you the most in him?
Well, as a composer and as an improviser and a storyteller from the drum chair, was real magical and mystical. He had deep roots in jazz, inspired by Kenny Clarke and Max Roach and Sid Catlett and the earlier jazz masters, that he became a jazz master of expression on the drums. But he had relationships with all kinds of folks, man, and played with Coleman Hawkins and Thelonious Monk. And of course, we know the famous recordings with Bill Evans, Keith Jarrett. But he played with Albert Eiler also. And so many folks, Lenny Tristano, Al Cohn and Zoot Sims, yeah. You know.
I mean, it was, I think, really in the right moment, in the right place.
Yeah, in the you 50s, know. 60s, he was in New York, and yeah, he was on the scene and was friends with Philly Joe Jones, with Miles Davis Band, yeah, with John Coltrane, you know, and he played with Coltrane. Yeah. He played with Sonny Rollins, but never recorded or toured, but it had the occasion to be. Have relationships.
Exactly, to jam, to collaborate.
So yeah, so that's what I learned so much from Paul, is about that aspect of how the music takes shape from your relationships with people, and how you can communicate your ideas and share the space together, you know.
Once around the room.
Once around the room, voilà. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know?
Paul Motion, most recurring ensemble was always a trio with the sax, guitar, drums, or also with an addition of the bass, instead of having the pianist, because we know also Paul Motion started as a guitarist before becoming a drummer, right? Mm. Tonight you will reproduce then this sort of ensemble, but with a triple bass and double drums. So what should the audience expect?
Well, we play together in a very spontaneous way within the repertoire. My compositions and Jakob's and Paul's. And we play as a little ensemble with an orchestral concept about sharing the space together, leading and following, and everyone has an opportunity to contribute to the lead voice as well as accompanying each other. And Jakob is a very atmospheric guitar player also. He uses effects and different colors and sounds that create an atmosphere inside the music that is a carpet, let's say, somehow, you know, inside the sound with the basses and the percussion, which gives me the feeling of playing with an orchestra. So, and I'm playing the terragato and the C soprano as well as the tenor, and the way we shape the flow. When I change instruments, it changes the mood and changes the rhythm. And so we have a spontaneous way of orchestration that is real special.
Now that you're mentioning your instrument, I had one question that I wanted to ask you later, but then I'm going to ask you now because I'm too interested about it. How many do you own?
Well, you know, I live in the woodwind family, yeah. I would say, throughout my lifetime. So I have a really beautiful collection of instruments from my travels. Percussion instruments, stringed instruments, as well as wood flutes from Asia, and the Middle East, and Africa, and Europe. Some instruments have, like, they're timeless instruments that go back, way back. Early instruments from the Middle East, let's say, you know. Flutes that you couldn't say when that was made or something, you know, not like the saxophone. Mm-hmm. Saxophone's an early 1860s, but some of these other instruments like predate the music that you might think, but they represent the spirits in music in general, you know. So by vibrating on them, for me, it teaches me a lot about how I could vibrate on the saxophone and not play in any one particular style, just tonalities, and let the feeling of the music be the prominent idea and thing.
My dream would be to know what was the first musical sound that was ever produced by a human being. But
well,
never
it was
know.
Your voice. I think it was the voice,
percussion, something.
Voice and the drum, but probably the voice first. And Ornette Coleman told me once that this was really something. He said, he looked at me, he said, you know, there was music before it was a word.
Right.
You know, and it's about vibrations. And the vibrations in the universe, you know, that when you really feel music is about nature and the sounds of nature. So like those things, if they're in your roots as far as like your study and not just a technical exercise to play your horn, I think that's the music that touches people the most.
Yeah.
And in this particular ensemble, we are searching and exploring that possibility and concept. Like what could it be? One of my tunes is called As It Should Be. But what could it be?
We'll see probably tonight.
Yeah. So when that's in there, there's a lot of different things that happen in your communication in an ensemble.
So you have many instruments, but your main one is tenor saxophone. It reminds me that your father was also a tenor saxophone player. Parents, of course, influence at the beginning the kids, or you see your dad doing that one, so you probably want to do the same. If you wasn't a tenor saxophone player, and so you wouldn't probably discover the jazz at the beginning with your dad, do you know which instrument you might have fallen in love with apart from the saxophone?
Well, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think if my dad didn't play the saxophone or music, I would have still grown up with music because of my four grandparents. The Lovano Ferracci came from Alcata Le Fuse in Sicily, and the Verzi Serenidi family on my mother's side came from Cesaro, and they came to the States. I'm second generation, right? Italian-American, and Sicilian-American, if you want to look at it like that.
I think Sicilian people will be agreeing.
But they brought music. My grandmother, especially Ferracci, my dad's mom, her family were singers and played the mandolin, and I have tapes of them singing and parties and recordings that my dad recorded of them. Also, on my mom's side, there was a lot of music, so I grew up hearing Caruso and folk songs, and then in the eras that my parents were born, like 1925, 1927, and 8, and, they grew up in the whole jazz age.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, his family, my Uncle Nick played tenor saxophone, my Uncle Joe played the tenor saxophone, my Uncle Carl played the trumpet, and my dad played tenor, and my dad was the leading improviser and jazz player.
Oh.
Born 1925. Coltrane and Miles were 26. He heard Charlie Parker. My dad heard Lester Young. He played in Lionel Hampton's band when they came through Cleveland and had a great record collection.
Mm-hmm.
And from very young age, that captured me. There's just that sound. So, and then he gave me instruments.
Yeah.
I had horns. I had an alto. And when I'm 5 and 6 years old, and I'm learning how to put the reed on the mouthpiece and just play that one note without the horn.
I must have been so proud to see like the interest that you had.
Well, it was family. I was the oldest, you know, I was the firstborn, and at the time, I was born in 1952, right? At that time, my dad was one of the leading saxophone players around Cleveland.
Nice.
On the jazz scene, you know?
Yeah.
So I was really fortunate to grow up
to be exposed to that.
To be exposed to
firsthand.
Firsthand, and then in my lessons, trying to learn the repertoire of the music and listening to all the people on his recordings, which was Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis and Coltrane and Sonny Rollins and Bird, you know, and the big bands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Also Billie Holiday and Sarah Vaughan and those.
The musicality of
Frank
the
Sinatra,
voice, right?
Yeah, Frank exactly. Sinatra and all of that, you know. So it just all kind of became a big oneness for me. But if my dad didn't play, I would have still been, you know, because music was everything, you know, for my family, because they brought it
Exactly, right. If it wasn't just having your dad as a profession, almost professional, right?
Right.
Saxophone player.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was on the scene.
Right.
And when my mom, when they were engaged, my mom remembered hearing my dad playing and having the local band open for Stan Getz, Flip Phillips and stuff. You know, so he was one of the leading voices around Cleveland.
Those are really good stories.
Yeah, and it was a thrill to learn from his musicians too. As a teenager, when I first started to go sit in and play with his bands, because I was learning the music. The organ players and drummers and piano players, bass players that were playing with him, his generation, I became very comfortable playing with that multi-generational, multicultural aspect of jazz.
I think it's amazing. You were probably very much in a safe space and be like, okay, I can try it out, and then we'll see.
Well, it was a challenge to play with a sound that was appealing. Because I didn't want them to see me come with my horn and put their fingers in their ear, you know, like.
It was some pressure,
so,
right?
So a big part of my development in lessons was to try to develop a sound and a tone quality that was appealing. But I had all these recordings to listen to, Coleman Hawkins and Lester Young and Sonny Stitt and Gene Ammons. And had a chance to hear people live in the room that gave me an idea about what to reach for.
I guess also this learning process never ends, right? I was talking with Joshua Redman just before, and he keeps saying he likes to get the energy, right, from the people he tours with, he collaborates with. That's he always wants to be like, I want to learn from them. And I guess that never ends, especially in jazz, when so much is coming not from the past, but from the present.
You feed from everyone's ideas and contributions in the moment of now, always, you know? And you reflect and you represent your personal history, but in the moment of now, with whatever ensemble it is, if you pay attention to what's happening and you don't treat the music as an exercise, you're always learning. And it keeps you young and you're moving into tomorrow.
I can count all the projects that you've been involved into during your careers. Otherwise, I would talk here probably for hours listing, you know, the endless creativity and curiosity that you always show. What's your energy source? Like, what are you looking for when you search for a new project or you start a new project?
Well, the personalities of the different musicians, like my current working band, one of my working bands is my trio Tapestry project with Marilyn Crispell on piano and Carmen Castaldi on drums, who Carmen, someone I grew up with in Cleveland, he played with my dad. And Carmen was, out of all my friends, my generation, he was my dad's favorite drummer because he loved the way he played the brushes, you know? And
doesn't everybody love how drummer play the brushes?
You know, because not everybody could really play the brushes, you know, and really get into inside the rhythm and lay some kind
it's
of...
caressing.
To play melody, to play a melodic rhythm with the brushes, you know. Anyway, that trio is, I write the material for that specific personnel and sound. So each one of my groups has a special repertoire that I try to focus on for who's in the band, and just like once around the room. You know, the music that we're playing of my compositions with this band were written for this particular group, and pieces that I don't really play with other groups. So it's kind of a special repertoire.
It's like a dedicated letter to each one of them.
Yeah, and I've learned that through the years playing with a lot of different bands. If you have that aspect, then each time you play, like when I had my Us Five band with the double drummers and Esperanza Spalding, and that particular group had a repertoire. We did three records. We had Now I have three recordings with Trio Tapestry. We have a beautiful repertoire where I could play two and three nights and not really repeat a tune. If I choose to do that, you know?
Absolutely.
So that, I think, is an important thing. And I learned that from playing with Paul.
Yeah.
Because with Paul and Bill, we had an amazing repertoire from all the recordings we did. Broadway music and Bill Evans compositions, Billie Holiday tunes, and Paul's music. Occasionally one of my tunes or Bill's, but we mainly played Paul's tunes, you know, that he wrote a lot of them for the trio.
Yeah.
So some of those records that we made, we're playing some of those tunes for the first time on the record. And then we would explore them in live settings, you know. So that was also some magical things that I learned from Paul about how to approach something that you haven't played repeatedly.
Right, because I guess the stress is always there, right? Of course, you're also a performer, so you also want to give, I guess, a good performance to the audience, to the person who's listening to the record. But that's, I think, the power of jazz. You manage to... somehow you guys can always go beyond that one. It's not like, oh, I need to play my Chopin really properly, has this written, right? You can maybe circumvent a kind of a situation, a kind of a mindset.
And you create, magic happens, you're creating in the studio. Like, you learn that listening to Miles Davis with Wayne Shorter, that particular band, those recordings, a lot of those recordings, they didn't rehearse before they went to the record date. They made takes and were playing things for the first time, like ESP, The Sorcerer. You could name almost every record, especially with Miles and Wayne Shorter and Tony Williams, Ron and Herbie. They were, everything was fresh. And then they went on tour and they played and they got into some other things. Yeah, then they had an idea where the foundation was. But like a lot of the magic was because it was the first time. Through being around Wayne Shorter and knowing him a little bit and playing with him on occasion really was amazing, too. He was a mysterious traveler.
Yeah, and I travel with Paul, right? Yeah. They're all living, but... I really like the, so at the end of your biography on the website, so joelovano.com, ends with, Joe Lovano continues to explore new horizon within the world of music as a soloist, band leader, and composer. Given that you have a fondness for hats, because I think I never seen you without wearing one, which one, there you go, yes, I've seen it. Which one of these three hats you prefer wearing at the moment? So soloist, band leader, composer.
I feel it's all one, you know, because as a soloist, you're a composer and you're trying to compose spontaneous phrases and structures and harmonies, the rhythm spirit in the music, you know. As a band leader, I really enjoy that part of putting groups together and then sharing the space in equal footing and letting everybody contribute, you know, not be the kind of leader that just demands, you play like this, you play that, you do this, you do that, you know.
That reminds me exactly what happened in 2016 when you were touring then with Lawrence and... And I was rereading what I wrote that night, and you left so much space to Lawrence. And after, I think, that tour, he managed, I think, 1 or 2 years, and now he published his own album. And now he's it's like he probably got his confidence thanks to you.
Well, Lawrence and I have been playing a lot together, also with my band Sound Prince, with Dave Douglas, with Lawrence and Linda Mahan Oh, or Yosushi Nakamura on bass, Rudy Royston. But Joey Barron is the original drummer in that group. Yeah, you know, to play with musicians that have an approach that is free-flowing, harmonically, melodically, and rhythmically. So you can shape music together. And also players that have confidence to lay out and to not play and to feel that when they're not playing, they're playing. by not playing.
It's a conversation, you know? Yeah. At the same time.
So it's not playing with people that just play at the same time. They play together, you know? And that's a funny thing, because sometimes musicians, the instrument plays them a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like a drummer, he'll sit down and play the drums. That's why I love playing with Carmen or Joey or Jorge. They don't just play the drums. They play music.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing the drums, but they're not letting the drums play them.
Yeah, the drums, you
know?
The tools.
Yeah, you know, and that goes for everybody in the band. The communication in our group, once around a room with Larry Grenadier and Thomas Morgan and Anders, the communication in the basses, they're playing as composers, and the orchestrations are happening within the music by someone laying out. Maybe sometimes one bass plays. Sometimes maybe Larry and Tomas play together, and Anders takes a different role because he's playing electric bass.
Mm-hmm.
He might take a different role and play in the front line with me, or play with the, more with, like with the guitar.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that can be. You know, that's what I mentioned before. Like, what could it be?
Mm-hmm. And actually, you're saying that one now, like for the concert of tonight. You will be set, like the drummers facing each other, and then all the rest of you, so the other five of you, standing in the middle?
We've been setting up different. This tour, it depended on the room.
Of course, but when
we plan a nice concert stage, we kind of have the basses, the three basses together in the center.
Right.
And the two drums
on each side.
Yeah. Jakob more in front of like Joey's side,
mm-hmm.
and I'm more in front and in the center on Jorge's side.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of playing that kind
of
a circle.
Right? Yeah, so the two voices, let's say, here.
And the way the rhythm section feels and feeds each other is the center stage kind
mm-hmm.
of.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm free to move around, so sometimes I might play over here with Jorge, you know, or I might move over and play with Joey.
I remember you like to walk around the stage.
Yeah, you know, because when you play at different places, especially in a group like this, if I go and play on Joey's side with Jakob, maybe Jorge might lay out or whatever, but there's a sound that comes from that area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not every band you could do that with, but this particular group, we can.
I think the last question, because we are talking, I would like to talk to you for hours. I guess then the battery of the microphone is going to die. You still have a few more gigs in Europe, so Lausanne now, and then you have Netherlands and you have Spain, and then you are going back to New York, if I'm not mistaken, playing with actually Marcin Wasilewski at the Village Vanguard. So you start the year in Village Vanguard and you finish the year in Village Vanguard. Are you excited?
Yeah, it's amazing, because the Vanguard is one of the temples of jazz,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and the sound there and the atmosphere and being home also, mm-hmm. playing at home. There's a lot of beautiful feelings, and the spirits in that room are really amazing. We played with the Sound Prince. We had it date, and it turned out to be the week that Wayne Shorter passed.
Mm-hmm.
On that stage where Wayne stood countless times, there was a deep feeling in the room that whole week. You know, we were celebrating Wayne's music, touching on a few of his tunes, but our tunes that are inspired by him, you know. And also playing with this particular group that I am in 2 weeks, with Marcin Wasilewski Trio. We've been playing a lot together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a recording on ECM, Arctic Riff.
From 2020,
And this is the first time that we're going to play in New York and in the States together. So I had a week at the Vanguard, and I brought them to play with me. And the Polish Ministry of Culture is helping with the visas and the hotels and the flights, and it's amazing. Yeah. It's really fantastic, man, the support that they have from the Polish ministry.
But that's how it should be, right? Because when we think about the jet scene, we always obviously think about the US, but there's so much also going on in Europe, and sometimes you hear of rising stars, or sometimes they don't find the funds even. So it's really nice that there is even like a support from the government.
There is. And with Jakub,
huge artist, by the way.
With Jakub also.
Yeah.
The funding from the Danish ministry also was, we were able to play a week at the Vanguard this year with this band.
Nice.
You know? And that's something that's very important that's not happening in the States. There's no Ministry of Culture in the States. Mm-hmm. The States is a very commercial mm-hmm. world, mm-hmm. and you have to deal with a lot of issues that have to do with that, you know, to work, mm-hmm. you know. I feel very fortunate that I'm able to do what I'm doing and have it at a level where there's no borders and at all. It all becomes a beautiful oneness about the music and how to present it, you know. There's quite a few of us that are very fortunate to have had careers that people paying attention to the music.
Yeah, you know? And it started, like I say, also again in the right time. And
mm-hmm. Especially in this creative improvised music that we play.
Because nowadays I think it's too... For the young stars, I don't know how they're doing it, seriously. You have so many tools to, let's say, market yourself, but sometimes none of them works because it's just a drop in the ocean. There's so much of it
mm-hmm.
outside. So.
Yeah, but, you know, we have for years, some of us have been addressing workshops and jazz forums and classes wherever we go. And up-and-coming musicians that have participated and been there in some of those scenes are the young rising folks today. So I feel really incredible about the opportunity to address young musicians, because that's the future of the music, you know? And jazz is an idea that will always be with us.
Right.
And I'm really proud of that.
I think with this, can close the interview. This is amazing. Thank you so much,
Joe
Lobano.
You
will play again at the Salpa de Reschi on the 1st of November with Jacob Bro. And all the fives that we're going to mention again. Larry Grenadier, Thomas Morgan, Anders Christensen on the bass, and Joy Baron and Jorge Rossi on the drums. Thank you, Joe.